Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, there it is. You know that music. You know what that means. Texans are 5-1. Times are good. Green Bay coming up this weekend. We got a lot to get into with our next guest. He is the Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Houston Texans. He is Nick Caserio. Nick, great to have you. How are you doing this morning?
Morning, fellas. Thanks for having us. I have plenty of time, and since we're on the wrestling kick at the beginning of the program, I have not seen the McMahon documentary as of yet. So okay. It's on my list. But it's probably going to have to wait for a different point in time.
Okay, maybe the bye week or maybe after the season.
Nick, I've been grinding.
I'll have to interrupt my
film.
my financial podcast that I listen to during the course of the day in lieu of a wrestling documentary. So maybe I'll get to it, but I'll try to continue to educate myself about venture capital and all things finance related when I'm watching film.
There you go.
Watch the McMahon documentary. You can learn how to be a billionaire. You need financial advice. Yeah.
Hey.
Nick, I just, in an effort, I've been grinding film trying to get on your level and on Sean's level when it comes to professional wrestling. So I've been watching wrestling documentaries.
Welcome to the dark
McMahon
side.
One. Yeah. But I know. But now I'm going to pull you into it. Now I'm concocting all kinds of dramas to try. I'm going to pull you into the pro wrestling world of sports talk radio, and I'm perfectly willing to be the heel on this.
Maybe me and Tony Khan can have a podcast together, and then we can talk all things wrestling.
Oh, that would be something.
he's an undrafted free agent expert, according to
That's what I've been told. Yeah,
that's what you need is the UDFA podcast.
Yeah.
Nick also okay. Nick. All right, let's get down.
We're off to a strong start. I can already tell.
Yeah.
Nick, I have to pay off on a promise I made to my social media followers, which is I put out the question to them: Who do the Texans? Who should they trade for before the trade deadline? Which position group? And I am here to demand that you trade for either a safety or a cornerback based on the responses of the people. If you care about the people, that you'll trade for a defensive back sometime in the next couple of weeks.
We're all about the people, so we'll see how the next few weeks go. So I'll take that under advisement when we turn the transaction in, say, on behalf of the city of Houston and Seth Payne's followers, we hereby declare the following trades.
Yes, like a proclamation that they have in town square, like a scroll.
It is the way that I will be framing it if you do a cornerback or a safety.
You could take all the credit, no problem.
There you go.
Okay, good.
There you go. Nick Caserio joining us on Sports Radio 610. All right, Nick, let's get into it with this team here. 5-1. I am asking this from a place of excitement with this team. How close do you feel like you guys have been to playing your best football this year so far, even with the 5-1 record?
Yeah, I think we're off to a decent start. It's good to be 5-1. We also understand 5 wins doesn't really get you anything in this league. So one of the things that we talked about in the offseason is trying to get off to a good start collectively as a team. And there's 17 opportunities that we have during the course of the year. So for that particular week, can we do enough to put ourselves in a position to have a chance really to win the game in the fourth quarter? I think that's the goal for everybody. That's the goal for every team. When you look around the league, I would say the first, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks just going through it. I mean, we were kind of keeping track of this. We got 9-1 score games, 10-1 score games, half the games are coming down to the final play. It just speaks to the overall competitiveness of this league. So our focus is on what do we have to do that week against the particular opponent that we're playing. So, and can we do enough? It really doesn't matter what the score is. It's all about just trying to come out on a positive side of the ledger. So if we win 3-2, that's a great win. So it doesn't really matter what it looks like or how it looks. Do we do the things that are necessary and that are conducive to winning? That's where our team's focus is, and that's the emphasis from DR to the group on a consistent basis on a week-to-week, on a week-to-week basis.
Nick, Sean and I were, before the Patriots game, kind of looking at just trying to step back and take a broad, view of things. And one of the weirdest things for me this year has been that, all right, teams have – decided to try to limit the explosive passing as much as possible. And it feels like that part of that strategy has been effective. But at the same time, going into that game, the Texans were second in passing yardage. They were Nico Collins is still leading the league in wide receiving. And yet they hadn't scored a bunch of points. So in the strategy that teams are using against the Texans offense right now, what's the biggest obstacle really that they need to get over the hump with?
Yeah, I would say it's a give and take league. And I would say not just specific to our team, but when you look across the league, I would say the way teams play, the goal is you try to limit the explosive plays with the opposing offense. Because explosive plays usually lead to scoring plays or put you in a more advantageous position. So even if you hit an explosive play, then it comes down to what happens in the red area. And red area is always about points. So can you hold a team to a field goal? Can you get the ball in the end zone? So I'd say, you know, Green Bay is a good example. They're one of the best red area offenses in the league. So regardless of how they do it, when they get down to the red area, they score. And we've had our moments where we've gotten down to the red area and we've scored. We've had other situations where we've kind of stalled out and had to attempt field goals, but it's not specific to the Texans. Each team is going to play a certain style in a certain way. I think when you read some of the different teams and the clips and going into the game, everybody's trying to limit the explosive plays. So everybody understands going in that it's probably going to be difficult. And if you hit a few, then maybe that gives you a better chance. So the defenses are really good in this league. Everybody's just trying to keep the ball in front of them and force teams to drive the football. And then really it comes down to the scoring plays, what happens in the red area. And then it really comes down to situational football. Can you execute at the end of the half? Can you execute at the end of the games? And I would say our team has done a good job at the end of halves. So going back a few weeks ago, we kind of were able to kind of get the two scores. We kicked the field goal at the end of the half. Can't remember if that was Jacksonville or a week before, but kicked the field goal at the end of the half and then come out in the second half and really put points on the board. So in the end, this league comes down to situational football. Can you execute in the end of half? Can you execute in the end of game? Can you do a good job in a red area? And do you take care of the ball? And do you take the ball away? So when you look at, I would say, Green Bay through that lens, they lead the league in turnover margin. They lead the league in takeaways. They do a good job in a red area. There's a reason that they're 4-2. They had to play without Jordan Love there for a couple games, but they found a way to win. So each week is about, can you figure out a way against the opponent to put yourself in an advantageous position to give yourself a shot to win it in the fourth quarter? So that's not going to change for us. It's not going to change for the opponents. It's just that's our focus each week. And the game kind of declares itself after the first, you know, into the first quarter, into the second quarter. And then it's in the end, it comes down to execution. And are we doing the right things from our standpoint that are conducive to winning?
Nick Caserio joining us on Sports Radio 610. Nick, when you guys made the Stephon Diggs trade in the offseason, you know, at that point, everybody's healthy and everybody's envisioning this offense with Nico and Steph and Tank and all the crazy numbers that you guys could put up. But here early on in the season, Tank's missed a game. Nico's going to miss a few games. When you were factoring everything that went into bringing Stephon Diggs on board, how much did his availability and him answering the bell all the time factor in? Because, you know, these first 5-6 games, it's felt really good to know that you've got that other elite target out there to go along with the other guys out there.
Yeah, knock on wood, Steph's been available. And you look at the course of his career, I mean, he's been a very durable and productive player. So availability sometimes is more important than ability. Now, when you take availability and you combine it with ability, and I would say specific to Steph, just his mindset, the way he works, the way he practices, there's a reason why that he's had the success that he's had over the course of his career. In some respects, you look at Mixon, similar. I know he missed the three games because of the tackle and the ankle and all the rest of it. But when you look at the arc of a player's career, their availability, their durability, it's a part of the evaluation. It's not the sole purpose. But, you know, and then you look at the player and how they work, and then you usually see there's a correlation between why they're good and the mindset that they have, that they put themselves in a position to help a football team. So we're happy with that Steph is a part of the team. We thought we were getting a good football player. I think what we felt we were getting with Steph has kind of come to fruition. We haven't seen anything different to dissuade us from, you know, whatever else people may have thought it is or isn't. So Steph's been a great teammate. He's got a great attitude, brings a lot to the football team. We have a number of players like that, you know, and which is why we're fortunate enough to be in the position that we're in currently. But we also understand there's a massive amount of work ahead of us. And, you know, we're going to play, I don't know, three games starting Sunday, three games, 11 days. And it's about what can we do that week to put ourselves in the position to go 1-0, regardless of the outcome. Come in the next day, evaluate what happened, try to fix the things that need to get corrected, try to build on some of the things that we did well, look at the opponent, and just go out there and try to put together a good plan, which our coaches work their ass off and are diligent about. So, I mean, this league is just so damn competitive. Mm-hmm. So we just got to put ourselves in a position where we have an opportunity, and hopefully you have your best players available. And if they're not available, then that's where you have to rely on the depth of your team and the depth of your roster, which we've talked about at different points on this show. How you build your depth on the roster, how you build your depth off the roster with the practice squad, because at some point you're inevitably going to need everybody to make a contribution. And in the end, the best team is going to win, not, you know, the best individual collection of people.
Could you see this being a long-term thing with Steph even beyond this season, Nick? I know it's a one-year thing with him right now.
Yeah, we're open-minded on everything, so we'll have conversations at different points with players. We'll have it during the season. We'll have it after the season. We'll have it in free agency. So at the appropriate time, we'll have the discussions, you know, with the players. I mean, I think we've shown the propensity to kind of be open-minded and do whatever, whenever. So if we feel that's a situation that makes sense and there's mutual interest from both parties, I mean, we're always going to listen. We're always going to have constructive dialogue. Whatever the outcome is the outcome. But, you know, we're glad that the players that are on this team here in the 2024 season are here and they can help us win, because ultimately that's the goal.
Yep.
Okay, Nick, when you guys signed Cam Akers before training camp or right at the beginning of training camp, my initial thought was, all right, this is okay. This is a fun experiment. We'll see. But this is two Achilles tendon tears. Don't everybody get so excited about Cam Akers and maybe even seeing the field this year. And then we see him on the first day of practice. And I'm like, well, what the hell? This guy, I would not pick this guy out as having a second Achilles tendon tear less than a year ago. What were you guys honestly thinking at the time in terms of just your expectation, I suppose? Did you have a feeling that, okay, this isn't your normal dude?
Sure. And I would say that particular situation, he was available. He'd been out of the league a few years, or not out of the league, but was on IR because of his medical situation. So part of our process is, whether it's in the spring, whether it's in training camp, we'll bring players in the building, periodic, we'll work them out, we'll make an assessment. And if we feel like it's an opportunity that makes sense, and because we think this is a player, they may have something that he can bring to the table, then we'll add him to the team. So that was a situation where brought Cam in, worked him out. He was healthy. He was, I don't know, 8 months out from his last injury situation. So we're going to bring players into the building, give them an opportunity. I would say, speaking specific, I know the trade is public there, you know, with Cam, but awesome kid. Glad he was in our program. They did a lot of things well. Honestly, a credit to him and his mental fortitude and his mental toughness and his physical toughness. Not everybody can come back from something as significant as what he's had to deal with. To his credit, he was out there. He was available. He made progress. He improved. He got better. He helped us win some games. I would say in that particular situation, this is more of a case of us just kind of managing the roster here a little bit. Like, we feel we have a pretty good group there at running back. Cam has helped us a little bit as well. We feel like we're in a pretty good spot with DP, Joe, and Dare. And then I'm sure we'll have some depth on the practice squad here at some point. So, and there was an opportunity that kind of matched up Minnesota. You know, they had reached out and they were kind of in a position where they were kind of looking to potentially add some depth. I think, you know, Aaron's kind of been in and out there a little bit, really good player. They got Tyson Chandler behind him. And I think they were maybe looking for like another back. So it's at some point, you know, it's just us managing the roster and trying to make a decision that, you know, we feel is in everybody's best interest. But, you know, certainly grateful that Cam was here. I think he lives in Houston or is living in Houston. So, you know, maybe in the offseason I'll see him at Whole Foods or something like that and wish him well and give him a big hug. But, you know, Cam's a good player. Certainly wish him well. He helped our team. We have a lot of respect and admiration for the work that he put in given his circumstance.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us on Sports Radio 610. Nick, just sticking with the running back position, I don't know that Texan fans or people like us covering the Texans were happier about a touchdown to go up 41-21 or whatever it was at the end of that Patriots game than Damian Pierce getting into the end zone. Do you feel like Sunday was maybe kind of a breakthrough weekend for Damian?
Yeah, everything's kind of case by case. I would say just going back to DP, DP probably had one of the best off seasons of any player in the program. I mean, he worked his ass off. He was in good condition. He was healthy. He was making progress. And he helped our team. And when DP's gotten opportunities, he's taken advantage of them. And, you know, Sunday was a good illustration of that. So he missed the 3 games or 3 weeks, whatever it was. But, you know, for him to come back, I'd say his attitude, he's never wavered. He's always upbeat. He always has a positive attitude. He's a good football player. You know, I think sometimes everybody kind of gets caught up and kind of can accentuate maybe some of the negative things that go on, or maybe it doesn't meet the standard or expectation. Mm-hmm. I'd say DP is, you know, everything that this program is about. So anytime you see a player work that hard, have some success, I mean, that play was a team play. It was well blocked in the perimeter. Dalton, Titus came around, DP kind of squirted through and he showed good balance after contact, and then he was able to get in the end zone. So, I mean, it's a credit to DP. It's a credit to DB and the offensive staff. So DP's a good football player. I've talked about this in the spring. We've talked about this. We feel he's going to help our football team in some capacity, and because he's shown the ability to do that. So, you know, happy for DP for the work that he's put in, but also understand that, okay, that was last week. Honestly, it doesn't have any bearing about what happens this week against Green Bay, because this is a week-to-week league. So, but glad Damian's on the team. He's had a great attitude, and he's made positive contributions to the program on a lot of levels.
Is Christian Harris, like, is he in a spot right now where you guys expected him to be? Did, like, in August, did you know it was going to be this long of a recovery, and or has there been complications along the way?
Yeah, I think this has kind of been a little bit of a tricky one, Seth, if I'm being honest with you. So, you know, I think there's been some stops and starts. I mean, he was available, then he wasn't, and then he was back, and then I think that kind of second go around, we kind of figured he was going to probably be out there for a period of time, but it's hard to put a timetable on anything. So, I mean, we'll kind of take it one day at a time, 1 week at a time. And, you know, when a player's available, then he'll be available and he'll be on the field. So, I mean, I think we understood that there was going to be a period of time that we were going to have Christian, I mean, which is one of the reasons that we put him on DFR to start the season. So, kind of take it 1 week at a time. And when he's available, you know, hopefully he can help us. And, you know, but like I said, I'm not going to put any particular timetable on that one because it's really not fair to anybody involved.
Has that, or just any other situations kind of shaped how you've handled Nico Collins? With Nico, you know, that hamstring had popped up previously, and he played through it. Do you get to a point with a soft tissue where you're like, all right, well, we got to shut this guy down until he feels really good for a couple weeks?
Yeah, it's always case by case. So our medical staff does a great job. So they provide the information to us, and then we look at the team. How do we want to manage the team? What do we feel makes the most sense? Understanding that there's certain parameters and rules in place, and if we feel like that makes the most sense, then we'll go ahead and do it. So Nico's working hard, certainly making progress. You know, hopefully once we get through the Jets game or whatever it is, I think it's after the Jets game, mm-hmm. then we'll see what his availability is. And no different than kind of what we did with Kurt there as well. Kind of Kurt had to start the season on DFR, so knew he was going to be out there for a period of time, started practicing here over the last few weeks. And, you know, we activated Kurt here yesterday, so what that means relative to Sunday, you know, I'm not really sure. But every situation is different. Every athlete is different. Every person's body responds differently. So all we can do is take the information, assess the information, try to make a good decision, and then just keep pressing forward. So that's what we're doing in the case of Nico.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Caserio joining us on the program. Nick, you mentioned Kurt Heinisch. There's obviously some moving parts on the defensive line now with Mario Edwards' suspension for 4 games. You got Danico Autry coming back. When we asked you about Danico in the preseason, you had one of the best answers about any individual player that you've ever had on this program before. Can you speak to the composition of the D-line now over the next month or so with what you're losing in Mario but you're bringing back on with Danico Autry?
Yeah, we felt in the offseason that the defensive line as a collective group was probably going to be one of the stronger groups on the football team. And I think what has happened over the first 6 games has done nothing to dissuade that. So all kind of different. They all kind of bring different things to the table. I'd say Danico is a player who, I mean, I eloquently stated how we felt about him in the offseason, alluding to your comments. But he's a good football player, has some position flexibility. He's done a great job of just kind of handling the situation. He's in really good condition. He's gotten stronger. So he's actually probably in a better spot now than he was during the offseason because he kind of dealt with some stops and starts. So we think Denico, once he's available and kind of get through the week of practice here, will be a good addition to the group. That's what he felt like. And, you know, Mario has done a great job. I think that was a player who we thought fit our front, how we play. And that's kind of manifest itself in the way he plays. I mean, for a guy's 300 pounds, the way he runs, his quickness, his playing strength, his ability to chase the ball. And then Kurt has been a very steady presence there. You know, I bust his chops a little bit and kind of tell him that, you know, his brother's a better player, which he didn't like hearing much about that. But Kurt's a good football player. He's very dependable, very tough, very instinctive. So, you know, he'll start. He's been practicing here for a few weeks, so we'll get through the week. So we feel like we have kind of 9-10 players that if we had to bring them all to the game, we could use them. Can't bring everybody to the game. So, and then, you know, we have some depth off the roster as well on a practice squad. Solomon Bird's made some progress here during the course of the season. He's definitely further along than he was there in training camp. And then we signed, you know, Tommy Togiai, who has some experience, who's kind of a little bit bigger body. So everything starts with the front. DR has talked about that. You know, we're only going to go as far as the front takes us. And then when you put that at the front on top of the second level, and then you get back to the secondary level. So, you know, we felt like that we'd be competitive on defense with the players that are in the building, understanding it's not perfect. But, you know, we feel like that's kind of come to fruition, and we're in a pretty good spot there.
You know, with Will Anderson, I liked what D'Amico had said about him this week, where he said, okay, it looked like some of the stuff at the top of his pass rush, creating separation to finish and get the sack, really showed up. And, you know, that was something that Will had worked on all offseason. And then early in the season, it felt like Will looked again a little bit more like he did in the first half of last season. With somebody like Will, the conscientious guys are sometimes the hardest guys because they're nervous. Like Will almost is too, is it that Will sometimes is too conscientious for his own good and he's afraid to try new stuff? Because I sense this in him. He wants to do right all the time and he doesn't want to do it. So when he tries to integrate new moves, it's going to take a little while for him to be super comfortable doing it. Do I read him right on that?
I would recommend that he talk to you about pass rush mechanics. So, but no.
Well, look, hey, whoa, wait. I'm sensing your sarcasm. You.
Will's a really good player. Will's a really good player. He works his ass off. He cares a lot about winning. And, you know, pass rush, honestly, it's a science. So, and there's different ways to get to the quarterback. There's different mechanisms. So, I mean, really what we want the defense to do is just play fast, trust your techniques, and everything else kind of takes care of itself. So, and that's the way we coach it. I think it's like a receiver, right? You know, when I was coaching the receivers, you try to figure out, you know, six different techniques to release to the line of scrimmage. Well, not really. You need one or two things that you kind of have in your arsenal. So if they take kind of the first thing away, you go to the next one. So I think football in general, just generally speaking, you don't overthink it. Understand the assignment, understand what you're trying to do on each play, and in the end, just go out there and play football. Yeah. So
no,
I think teams have a lot of respect for, you know, for Will, for Daniil, and they're certainly, you know, going to do things to account for those players. So, Will's in a good spot. No, Will can help the team. I mean, and I think he's, you know, we're glad he's here.
Nick, no, listen, I'm not like when I say that I'm nervous about him because he's conscientious. That's not a criticism at all. It's just that I enjoy sometimes those guys who are super conscientious. Like it takes them a while to really let it loose, you know? And like with Will in the offseason, he was having a conversation with somebody where he said, like, yeah, I've been working on a spin move and I want to add it, but I'm nervous about doing it. And I know that this is because every high school defensive line coach despises his guys spinning because nobody knows when to do it. And probably his college coach told him not to spin. So there's a part of Will that I've seen this many times. It's like in their brain, they want to do right, but they've had 19 different coaches tell their defensive linemen never to spin. So it's hard for a conscientious young man to sometimes tap into the darker elements of his selfish pass rushing side. Yeah.
Maybe we could put him in a dark corner and, you know, play some, you know, heavy metal music and that'll
yes get yeah him, get him have him watch pro wrestling yeah. Have him, sit down and have him watch some Stone Cold Steve Austin
dude
or something.
I think a Will
you're
Anderson
giving Sean too many ideas
yeah. Well no dude, I don't know if I don't think I could handle a Will Anderson heel turn. I love this
maybe
version.
Heyman could help him out
yes
maybe
he needs an
Paul
advocate
in.
He needs a wise man Nick he needs no, an advocate
and it's always a good thing in the long term with the conscientious ones obviously because right. They want to be good team players and
we
everything.
Want them
but
to care all, caring yeah, but is a good thing
yeah yeah, but I suffer for them. I know the pain that they're in, that they're like, Will's trying to do the right thing all the time. The really good pass rushers, sometimes they're a little psychotically irresponsible.
Like Lawrence Taylor, a good example.
Yes, be a little bit more, follow Bingo. His program. Bingo. Whatever Lawrence Taylor did, do exactly that. On the field, off the field.
And we're talking to Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and GM. Oh, I can get this in right now, Ben. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 on Odyssey Station. I already know Nick has time. We got that out of the way. I was thinking about this, Nick, because the money is so big right now. You know, like even the like
where?
The average in the NFL.
Something I could get in.
The average, you had your shot. Yeah. Even the average player is making life-changing money. And I was thinking about this, like, the money is so huge now, and Will Anderson makes me think about this, like, how crucial is it to find guys that love football within the context of them being around a while? Like, I'm guessing there's going to be more and more guys that feel like earlier on, they've made enough money now, we can get out. How crucial is it to find guys that... Yeah, they want to make a lot of money, but they just love... You're not going to get the rug pulled out from under you because guys are leaving because they up and retire at age 26 or something like that.
Yeah, DR talks about this, I would say, religiously. And it's all about mindset, and it's all about work. And if you want to be great at something, like if you want to be affiliated with our program, if you don't enjoy competition and you don't enjoy the process and you don't enjoy and love football... It's probably going to be hard for you to have sustainable success in our program. But you look at over the course of the league, some of the best players were some of the most diligent workers, and they were always finding a way to improve and enhance their overall ability because they cared about winning and they were ultra competitive and they wanted to be great. So in any line of work, in any business, your level of commitment in work is commensurate with your performance. So if you're committed to being great, are you doing the things that are necessary to be great? The money kind of takes care of itself. So look, we're not ignorant here, naive. Like money is a big part of our business. Money is a motivator for a lot of people, but you can't lose sight of the main thing. So from where you started to where you are now, we don't get into football or you don't get to any line of work unless you absolutely are committed and love what you're doing. So not to look at it from a personal level, and, you know, I'm not disclosing too much here, but when I started working in football, I mean, I made $14,000 in the NFL my first year. So if I was motivated by money, like I would have been doing something else. So if you're committed to being great, you're going to put the work in, and then the money is eventually going to take care of itself. So the players are well compensated. They deserve what they get. But in the end, regardless of how much money you make or don't make, it's all about, do you have a good process? Do you come in each day? Are you committed to being great? Or do you put in purposeful work? Because that's what's going to result in a good outcome. Now, the reality is, just because you do those things, does it mean you're going to win every single game? No, not at all. But if you show a level of commitment on a consistent basis, if you want to have sustainable success over the course of your career, which when you go back and look at some of the greats, and I was fortunate to be around a lot of them in New England, and I would say fortunate to be around a lot of them here in Houston in my short period of time. So, and I'd say, you know, let's start with our head coach. Like, there's a prime example of somebody who loves football, cares about people, works his ass off, and wants to do what's right for the organization on a consistent basis. Like, those are the types of people that you want to be around on a day-to-day basis. And that's our responsibility, to find those people with that mindset, to get them in the building, because in the end, that's what you're going to win with. Like, we can talk about all the bells and whistles and all the other BS out there, but in the end, that's what it takes to have a good winning organization over the course of a long period of time. And that's what we're trying to create here, you know, for the city of Houston and for this organization.
What was the first thing you bought with that $538 before taxes paycheck for your NFL money? Or is it, well, do you remember your first big purchase?
It was probably my rent in the apartment. So not to go like old school here. Nobody
awesome
cares. Nobody gives a crap about like my first year in the NFL. But I lived in Providence and was actually a two-story apartment that they turned. It was an old office building, two-story office building. They turned into a two-story apartment. And this was kind of the apartment where, like, the windows could go up and down. There weren't locks. So, like, if somebody wanted to jump in a window in the middle of the night, like, they could probably do that. So if I locked myself out of the house, like, that's what I lived in my first year. But I didn't care. Like, I drove 30 minutes each day from Providence to Foxborough, and I was immersed in something that I enjoyed doing. So I was probably paying my rent. Outside of that, look, I'm pretty low profile. I mean, I'm not a big car guy. Not a big clothing guy. I'm not a big jewelry guy. I know that surprises like the entire city
shocking
of Houston right now. But, so
you're not going to wear the Player of the Week chain around the locker room at any point this season?
Don't ask me about that, Sean. I don't think that's a good question that you should ask me.
That is, hey, well, you know what? No, that is interesting. when you're screening the young guys that come into your organization, the guys that when they start off as, you know, interns or whatever, does it become pretty apparent pretty quickly that some guys are built for this life and some guys aren't? The guys that kind of just leap into working a 16-hour day and they're thriving off it versus the opposite?
For sure. Absolutely. The reality is everything in life is earned. So nothing is guaranteed. The only thing that we're guaranteed is an opportunity each day. So can we maximize our opportunities in that particular day? Some can sustain and endure and put themselves in a position to have a successful career. Quite honestly, there's some people that in the end, they're better off doing something else. It doesn't make them bad people. It just means they might not be suited for what we do. So I would say, there's always a balance, too. I mean, everybody works hard, but I think one of the things that I've learned over the course of my time, so obviously my life has evolved and changed here. You know, I've been fortunate to be in the NFL my 24th season now. My mindset and attitude from when I started that first year making $14,000 to where I am now relative to my commitment, you know, my family commitment, my wife, our three girls. So things change and modify, and in the end, you can't lose sight of the things that are important. But to your question, Seth, absolutely, you kind of get an idea after about, you know, a full season. All right. You know what? This person's pretty good. He's going to have an opportunity. Or, you know what? I'm not sure it's really going to work out. Or maybe it's not here. Maybe it's in a different situation. So it's always case by case. It's no different than a player. But I would say our process and mindset for how we identify players that we bring in the building on a player level, it's no different for a player, for a coach, for somebody in football operations. If you have the right mindset, you have a good work ethic, you're selfless, and you want to work in a team environment, our job is to teach you the things that you need, that give you the tools that you need in order to be successful, and then just evaluate it as you go.
Okay, first of all, we're going to need to do it completely separate. This might need to be a podcast. Nick Caserio, the poverty years, and early on in his career. I think
$14,000. Yes, I mean, the fact that he had an apartment.
There's probably labor
actually
laws out there. I'm probably going to get arrested, or it's like some organization going to get arrested for that. But that was 56 years ago. So
you were about 5 years past the point at which they would have had you in a literal broom closet, which they moved away from that because of HR purposes, I think, in the NFL. But yeah, like it was, yeah. The fact that you had your own apartment was kind of a big deal.
Up in New England, it's not even Providence, that's not cheap, man. I think, Nick, you underestimate how interested people would be in stuff like that. I am curious, because early on in your career, you kind of bounced back and forth between coaching and personnel stuff and scouting and whatnot. Did you, when you got to the NFL, when you got to the Patriots, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do? And is what you're doing now what you thought you would be doing?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I had no idea what a personnel scouting department was until I went and interviewed for a scouting assistant position in New England. So I was fortunate to play for somebody near and dear to my heart, Joe Perella, my high school coach and college coach, who left a significant impact on my life. So I would say he was one of the reasons, he was really the main reason that I wanted to be in football. And I thought that I wanted to coach because I saw what he did for me and the impact that he had on our life, which I would say for a lot of us, our high school coach and college coach has a significant impact on our life. And our relationship was special. I love him dearly. You know, he passed away a number of years ago, but I would say what I wanted to do was probably start my career. I thought I was going to coach. So I left my job at Merrill Lynch there after 6 months to pursue a graduate assistant opportunity. I mean, everybody knows kind of the story, but sure. I went up to Saginaw Valley in the middle of nowhere, didn't know anybody because I just wanted to be in football. So working on a coaching side, and then the scouting assistant position was available in New England. That was Scott Pioli, Bill, their second year. And really, that position ended up being kind of a hybrid. There were scouting responsibilities. There were some coaching responsibilities. We had a quarterback coach pass away during training camp, so they had to redistribute some of the responsibilities on a coaching staff. So I did all the film breakdowns. So, and it really wasn't asking a lot of questions. It was essentially like, whatever you need to do, like, I'm here to help. And I would say that thought process and mindset has sort of stayed with me throughout the course of my career. So I would say my background and situation is probably unique because I've gone back and forth, but I think what it's enabled me to do, and we've talked about this on this show, is just give me an overall comprehensive understanding of the football operation from top to bottom, understanding the expectations and kind of looking at it from a coaching perspective, also understanding kind of the nuances and the dynamics of the team building perspective. So that's where I feel that I can be a good resource to, you know, our program and specifically to DR, and just be a good liaison. And in the end, I have a fiduciary responsibility to do right by as many people that are in the building. So I'm grateful for my experience. And I honestly kind of went in with an open mind, didn't really want to pigeonhole myself, which, again, I would just say, you know, not that I'm giving career advice, but I think sometimes like having more of a generalist approach as opposed to focusing more on one specific thing is the way to go. And then we kind of work ourselves into a position where you kind of settle into whatever your long-term endeavor or future is. It's kind of like kids, right? When they go down the road, they specialize in one sport so much. Like, be a generalist, try to participate as much as you want, find your own niche. You know, I'm fortunate and grateful for, you know, the way it's worked out in my situation.
Yeah.
I was just trying to. I was brainstorming in my mind the sabbatical. You should make people take sabbaticals, Nick. Like go work in medicine for a year or something.
That'll
come
go
back.
Well in the NFL. Just,
yeah,
they can go work for you guys.
I've always felt like defensive linemen should take a mandatory year off at the age of 30, or maybe 31 or so. Get your body right, and then come back and be a platoon player. Live the sweet spot for a defensive lineman is that guy that
load
comes
management.
In.
Load management. It's all about load management.
Yeah. That's it, man.
15 snaps of pass rush.
Not a bad idea. Yep. That's not a bad idea.
Nick, when we talk about, kind of talking about different schemes and systems and the way people operate, it actually made me think of the way a lot of Kyle Shanahan's former coaches who have gone on to be coordinators or head coaches elsewhere, when they talk about installing the offense, I like it because it almost sounds like there's a syllabus, you know, of like, okay, these are the skills that we need to have, and then we're going to progress on to this, both in the passing game and the run game. And I like that they kind of have a blueprint for how to install things and how it should look. With the run game, are there things you can point to where, okay, it's obviously not a finished product yet, but like we're doing certain things better now than we were before?
You're saying specifically in our situation?
Yeah, with the Texans, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anytime that you put in a system, you have a foundation that you're going to put in place. Okay, here are the things that are important. Here are things that we're going to emphasize. I would say offensive football, like in general, I mean, everybody says it's a system, but what it ends up becoming is kind of hybrid of a lot of different things. I mean, everybody's watching everybody else. Everybody's looking for some ideas. You have some things that are core and specific to your particular team. So we have certain schemes that we utilize that are important that we've had success. I mean, is every run going to turn into a 50-yard touchdown run? No. So you kind of need a little bit of a mixture. I think, you know, we're looking for certain things. The offensive line, here are the things that are going to be important. With the backs, here are the things that are going to be important. So everything is always a work in progress. So I would say just as a team overall, like we've had our moments and done a lot of good things. And the areas that, you know, we're trying to get cleaned up or get fixed. Look, the defense does a good job on the other side of the ball. So sometimes you got to tip their hat. They got the right call. They tee up a pressure into a particular look. And maybe you weren't anticipating. So that's the cat and mouse game going back and forth of offensive and defensive football, play calling, and trying to match up plays relative to the scheme. So feel good about the scheme. Bobby and the staff do a really good job on a week-to-week basis of trying to identify the things that are important. And here are the things that are going to be, you know, that we're going to need to do in order to be successful. I'd say like the Green Bay front is different than the New England front is different, which is different than the Jacksonville front, which you're going to see a lot of variability during the course of the week. So, but you always start with kind of, okay, these core principles, and maybe there's a tweak that you can make during the course of the week, or maybe you add a run that maybe isn't quote-unquote part of the system, but it ends up being a good fit for the team that you're playing. So that's the calculus that you have to go through on a week-to-week basis, and we'll continue to do that and just try to put the players in the most advantageous position possible where we can have success.
Nick Caserio joining us on Sports Radio 610. Nick, before we cut you loose, Green Bay game coming up on Sunday. You touched on a little of it before. And you mentioned Saginaw Valley State. You actually crossed paths with Matt LaFleur there. He was a player there when you were a grad assistant there, right?
You did your research, absolutely. So, or you listened to the John and Mark show yesterday.
I watched the YouTube last night. I watched the YouTube.
But yeah, no, my second year at Saginaw Valley, Matt was the quarterback. We had a good team that year. We went 9-2 or whatever. I can't remember exactly, but yeah. Played Bloomsburg in the playoffs. They beat us, but you know, Matt was a good player. It's no surprise that you know he's had the career that he's had. When you look at kind of the arc of his career, he started as a grad assistant at Saginaw Valley, Northern Michigan, kind of started on a lower level, got an opportunity in the league. I want to say his opportunity in the league might have been here in Houston in 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Matt's a really good coach. I have a lot of respect for Matt. So, yeah, it's a fun anecdote that we can share. I've known Matt a long time, and he was a good player. He was a good quarterback, and he gets his team and his quarterback to play well, so it's certainly no surprise.
So, a question from a listener that sent me this last night. And I've always been curious about this. What are the rules, or like what's standard operating procedure for when a coach gets fired, say mid-season, and then he's out there and he's unemployed, a head coach, and maybe he's got relationships with some other coaches in the league who are gonna go play that team that the coach was just fired from? Like, is Robert Saleh allowed to talk to D'Amico and or come on as a consultant? What's the deal like with in-season stuff after that?
Last time I checked, we live in America, so you know, people
damn
can
right.
do what they
want. Damn
they
right, Caserio. That's right. You're going to try to keep us from talking to Saleh before the Jets game?
Everybody has relationships in the league. So,
oh, hell yeah.
Robert's a really good coach. Robert did a really good job with the program. You know, he was very well thought of in the league, so a lot of respect for him and what he did for the Jets and, you know, what he did here, you know, for the Texans organization as well. So what conversations take place, like, those are up to the people involved. So I'm not going to get fined.
Oh, that's right. Well, yeah, Hugh Jackson ended up on the Bengals sideline in a game versus the Browns the year he was fired. So yeah, anything goes.
I don't think we're going to see anything like that. They don't have to worry about that. So
there you go.
Are
you winking? Are you winking?
Nick, I'll ask you a much more benign question. A listener wants to know who your favorite all-time wrestler is on the text page.
Oh man, gosh. I would say it's probably between Rock and Stone Cold. Okay. I'd have to go with that.
Okay.
So, and I'd say modern day, I mean, definitely love CM Punk. And I know not too many people talk about him, but I get a kick out of LA Knight. Yeah.
You love LA Knight. Yeah.
I love LA. I really love his shtick. So,
yeah.
Is that Knight with a K?
The K, yeah. You'd like him, Seth.
Yeah.
You'd like him. You'd like the cut of his jib, I think, Seth, for sure. He looks a little like Seth, actually.
Some of those early
Seth's
attitude
a little bit
guys
more ripped than him. I don't know. Yeah. we're going to go back to the attitude era. So.
No, I got to tell you, some of the stuff those guys were doing when I'm watching this, I get a little uncomfortable with it. I was just like, this is just overtly, yeah. The thing I liked about Stone Cold is I'm learning about WWE. Stone Cold and The Rock, like, they were much more just, they felt authentic, even though they're playing characters. There wasn't like a whole huge backstory and everything. It was just more like, this is this guy and this is what he does and how he acts.
Yes.
I like
that.
And
they could go away for 20 years and they can show up, and the way that they resonate with the fans, like, speaks to the impact that they have. So, but some of the stuff they did back in the day, I mean, Mick Foley jumping off the steel cage 4,000 feet to the ground, to the table. I mean, holy cow. So, I mean, I know everybody, you know, it's fake, it's not real, but if you jam into a table traveling 20 miles an hour, my guess is it's probably going to have some impact on your body.
Yes.
I mean, we could do another show, but I'm sure everybody's heard enough of me for one day.
Nick, listen, before you tell us whether or not J.J. Watt is coming back, and I get the sense just from...
You can honestly, have Watt on the show and ask him yourself.
Yeah. JJ.
He looks too good in that suit in studio, so he probably doesn't want to.
Yeah, he looks pretty comfy.
He looks comfy, yeah.
He had tweeted out the other day that he's very happy with where he is in life. And I like, honestly, when you watch a game week in and week out, you're like, how the hell? No, this is stupid. This is so much punishment.
Yeah.
And yeah, those wrestlers are the same. They're jumping 30 feet onto a table and then rolling in the next day.
Hey, Nick, I said we were going to let you go, but real quick, have you had a chance to watch Coach Belichick on any of the content that he's done so far? And what do you think?
Bits and pieces, like haven't really seen much. My suspicion is it's very insightful and it's very good, and yeah, he brings a very unique perspective. So, again, without having like seen everything in depth and in detail, that would be my guess as to how it's going.
You guessed correct. He's doing very well. Yeah,
it's really cool because he comes off like a professor almost. Mm-hmm. It's fun. You feel like you're getting an education. Like
It's funny you say that, because in the end, coaching is teaching. And when you look at some of the best coaches, they're the best teachers. So I would say Bill was as good of a teacher as I've ever been around. I would say Coach Reed was literally a teacher. And like in the end, coaching is teaching, and you just have to figure out how to communicate your message to the overall group. So he is very professorial, if that's even a word, but that would be an astute observation on your part, Seth.
If it wasn't a word, it is now. I'm using that. Professorial. I like that a lot. Hey, Nick, we really appreciate how generous you are with your time. Go get him in Green Bay this weekend, and we will talk down the road, I'm sure. Thanks for coming on with us, man.
Appreciate you, fellas. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. Good stuff. Nick Caserio. I enjoyed that.
There's one genuine compliment and seven sarcastic compliments he gave me during the
That's
interview.
Pretty good.
That's good. Pretty good ratio.
That's a good ratio, yeah. I think it's a fact that you're into the McMahon documentary now. I think, you know, there's a connection.
Is that what it is? We had a breakthrough. Well, that's why I told you, the guys in the front office and the head coach in Green Bay, all they had to do was try to get on Rodgers' level a little bit, mm-hmm. go do an ayahuasca trip with him. Like,
that's
understand. First seek to understand, you know?
Yep.
Get on the same wavelength as him, and it probably would have been just fine.
All right,
so, my version of doing an ayahuasca trip for you two is to just go immerse myself in pro wrestling.
The three of us?
I just can't. Yeah. Shawn Michaels makes me very uncomfortable. I'm kind of what am I watching here, dude?
The attitude era, Shawn Michaels? I wish I was watching this with you.
What a weird era.
The attitude era? Yeah.
Hey, we're going to capitalize on all this young male anger by doing the most homoerotic stuff we could possibly do.
Pretty much.
And get him to, yeah, it was weird. It was
and
weird.
And yada, 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 they became a publicly held company. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Go. All right, that was Nick Caserio. We'll dig into some of what Nick had to say. We got into a lot of stuff with him there about current team, Stephon Diggs, Will Anderson, Denico Autry coming back. We'll get into all of what Nick had to say as we roll on with the show. Big trades in the NFL over the last couple days as well. We'll break those down. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Coming up next, let's do that. As we circle back to some of the things Nick had to say, the importance of the trades that were made this week and how they impact the Houston Texans short term and long term. That's coming up next.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.